at a build-up to Easter, and we're looking at five places through that journey. And today we're starting with Bethany. And so Bethany is a village outside of Jerusalem. It's about 2 miles outside Jerusalem, and that's quite significant because it's outside of the place in Jewish law. Sick and infirm couldn't get too near the temple. And so Bethany is a place outside of that distance. And some of the research says that that Bethany was a place for the sick and for the poor. And it's difficult to say that word in a northern accent. For the sick and the infirm. And perhaps it was a place like an alms place that they could find sanctuary and rest. So it seems like a significant place for Jesus to find a home as well. For find a place where he settles, where he, when he visits Jerusalem, retreats out to. It may also point in our reading, it says that you will always have the poor with you. And that may point also to those around them that were struggling and infirm, and that place of help. But as we think about the place of Bethany, as we've reflected together on it, there's three events and three words that we want to highlight that helps us to think about Bethany. I've just remembered, we had a clicker. I've spent ages doing it, so I better use it. There we go. There's Bethany, a village in the hillside there. Interestingly, it also says that Bethany, you probably wouldn't be able to see the temple from Bethany. So it was kind of a little bit hidden away, that retreat place away as well. But there's three words that we want to think about and reflect on as we think about the place of Bethany and how significant it was for Jesus and for others. And helpfully, those three words all begin with W. So it should be easy to remember. But also with those three words, we've got three questions that we want us to think about as well. So Natalie's going to kick us off with the first word.
So Bethany is a place of worship. I don't know about you, but this morning I just found the worship really powerful and a really beautiful thing, a really lovely way to be in Jesus' presence this morning. But the way that we encounter worship in Bethany through this passage is not just about the singing. I'm going to read verse 3 again. Then Mary took a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. Now, probably ladies more, a pint of perfume, a pint, that is a lot of perfume. Half a litre of perfume is going to have a big impact, isn't it? It's yeah, you're going to notice that one. But this isn't just a common household oil that they would have had around. This is pure nard. It came from a resin that probably was imported from Arabia or northern India. It's really expensive, really expensive. And so to pour this out was really sacrificial for Mary. We read later on in the passage that Judas is really indignant about Mary's extravagance. He says this could have been sold for 300 denarii, which is about a year's wage, which is a lot of money. And he was really surprised that somebody would do that. But it seems from this that it wasn't a kind of calculated decision for Mary. She just poured it out. The other thing about this perfume and oil is that it was used for solemn acts of devotion. So often guests would have their heads anointed with oil, and they would have oil around for different things, but this oil was not that. This was really precious and signified Mary's real devotion and adoration of Jesus. And we read that Mary anointed Jesus's head, which I've already mentioned was a really common thing to do in those days when guests came to dinner, but also that she anointed Jesus's feet. Now, feet was not a place you kind of went to unless you were a servant or a slave. So for Mary to get down to Jesus's feet and to anoint his feet was incredibly humble of her. It showed great humility. And then she not only poured out this perfume on her feet, but she wiped his feet with her hair. Now, in those days, Jewish women didn't often have their hair down. It wasn't something that was done. So that was quite a humble thing for her to do, quite a vulnerable thing for her to do, to let her hair down and to wipe Jesus' feet with her hair. So what we see in Bethany is a really extravagant and sacrificial and humble act of worship. Mary pouring out, literally, something very precious in response to being in the presence of Jesus. And at the end of that verse I read again, it said, the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. It filled the whole house. It changed the atmosphere. And I know that we feel it here in our song worship. We feel the atmosphere change as we pour out our worship to Jesus. But actually, this shows that where we are in our homes and in our lives, actually what we pour out to Jesus can change the atmosphere. It can fill a place and change it. And I'm really encouraged by that. As I've already said, Jesus was offended at this extravagance. And sometimes our worship is not understood by other people. Maybe people were offended because Mary had let down her hair as well. So we have those responses going on. But Matthew and Mark also relate this story. And in both of their accounts, Jesus tells Judas off, but he says, Mary has done a beautiful thing, a beautiful thing. And I was just so struck by that our worship can be beautiful to Jesus in pouring it out. It isn't about anybody else. It's about us doing something really beautiful for him. And actually, we too, who know Jesus, and we have the joy of being in his presence. Mary did something quite prophetic in anointing him. It was going to be less than a week before his body would need to be anointed for burial. But actually, we know what he did for us. It's this weird time, isn't it, Lent, where we want to be somber and solemn. We're moving towards the cross, but we already know what happened. We can't really forget the resurrection in the midst of this journey of ours. So we know about his presence and the joy and the salvation that he brings. And so we have an opportunity to extravagantly worship him, to do a really beautiful thing for him. But what do we have? What do you and I have that we can sacrifice and devote to Jesus? If worship is our whole life, what is it that God has given to us that we can pour out for him? I just want to really quickly suggest three areas. The one of money, obviously for Mary, it was a financial sacrifice that she did. And that might be something that we are invited by Jesus into today. It might be your regular giving. It might be one-off. I remember in a time of worship being invited by Jesus to give to some members of our small group who needed various things. And at the time, we had some outgoings that we had to make, and we didn't know how we were going to make them anyway. But I really felt Jesus said, you can do this. And so I checked with Neil. Interestingly, Neil doesn't remember this event at all. So it's funny, isn't it, how our sacrifice of worship is different for each of us. But we did it and it was fine. But there's that invitation to give over and above at certain times in our lives. So there's the area of money. There's the area of time. Often it's a big sacrifice to give time. I was really challenged by Chris's talk a few weeks ago about time, and since then I've been trying to see time as my friend and not always really busy and just to look at it differently. But I felt like one of the practical ways I could do that during Lent has been to take time out in the middle of the day, just 10 minutes, to spend time with Jesus. And for somebody like me who has lots of lists and, you know, busy day, actually that's a bit of a sacrifice for me, and it's had to be something that I've kind of built in. And time looks different for all of us, but it might be that Jesus is asking you, inviting you for a bit more time. So there's money, time and effort. And just want to acknowledge today that sometimes worship, sometimes pouring out our heart and our devotion to Jesus, it takes effort and it's a big sacrifice, because we might have questions and we might be in a place of pain and it's not easy to do, but that's okay. And it might be a really, really small step in opening your heart more to Jesus. But for some of us today, I think that might be what he is asking of us and inviting us into. So it's going to be different for everybody. And there are many ways. But our question on worship, I think, is how is Jesus inviting you to give your worship to him? And it's not a command. It's an invitation to enter more deeply into worship and into your relationship with him.
Fantastic. So the first word is worship. The second and third words are quicker, so don't worry. The second word is welcome. It says in verse 2, here a dinner was given in Jesus' honour. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. And then it goes on to talk about Mary. Bethany was a significant place for Jesus. It says, and we know, that Lazarus and Mary and Martha were significant for him. It was a place of family. It says in Scripture that that Lazarus, when Jesus found out that Lazarus had died, it says, the shortest verse, Jesus wept. He was a significant person. They were a significant people. And we see that in the way that they opened their homes. We see that in the way that they welcomed others. And we've talked already about how Bethany was a place that welcomed the sick, the infirm, those that were in need. And this overflowed into welcoming Jesus. And he found a home in that place. Interestingly, it also talks about Bethany being the last stopping point from people, for the Galilean people coming up, which is where Jesus would be coming from. And so often there's a sense in which there's inscriptions and things around the place of Bethany that suggest that Galileans would have stopped and stayed and even lived in Bethany. So there was a sense, perhaps, in which Bethany felt a little bit like a home from home, in its look and in its feel and in its conversation for Jesus. But the welcome was a welcome from the home. Jesus was welcomed into their home. The other gospel readings on this suggest that it's Simon the leper's house. But I just loved it as I read it, because it's that kind of sense of all mucking in together. That sense of a small group community in Bethany, where Martha is serving in Simon's house and just coming together to bring food for the visitors and those coming through. And so what does welcome look like for us? How do we become a people who welcome? We talk about joining the welcome teams in church, but I think welcome, the welcome in our gatherings, is something that overflows from our welcome outside, our openness to responding to new people. We were challenged as a couple originally, and then as a family, as we've tried to work this out, by a talk that we heard that was thinking about how do we become more intentional in looking out. And one of the challenges of that talk was trying to eat with people on a regular basis. Food and eating meals together for the culture of the Bible was a significant time. It was really significant and a place of openness to others. Hence, the Pharisees and religious people criticized Jesus for eating with sinners and tax collectors. Why would he waste his time? Why would he give that much energy and effort to people like that? Because giving, opening your home and food was such a significant thing. But the challenge to us was, how do we open our home and how do we open our lives to give? And the specific challenge for us in following Jesus in this was, how do we give space for 3 people a week beyond our own family? Now, that might be inviting people into our homes on an evening. Or for me, at one point, it was thinking about, as being a teacher, how do I share my lunch times with other people? And so I felt challenged, very easy to be in your own little world and to kind of stay in your classroom and get your lessons ready for the afternoon and all that kind of thing. But there was a challenge in there for me of making that space to go and sit in the staff room and eat my lunch and chat and talk with whoever came in. So that was a stepping stone. And the challenge within that of the three people a week, one was to be someone from church, one to be someone outside of church, and the third person or third group of people could be one of those two groups. So three people altogether. And so there may be a challenge for us in that. How do we practically open up our lives and our homes? Which is our second question. Who are you, who are we opening up your homes, lives and homes to? To welcome them in, to welcome the stranger. And we talk about that in the wider sense of home and lives. That as we live out our day to day in the workplace, in our streets, in our communities, how do we live as people who welcome others in? So our second question, and actually in that topic, Mark Parsons is going to unpack that even more tonight as well. So if you don't get a chance to come tonight, do listen to the talk on that, thinking about opening our homes and what is home.
Okay, Bethany was also a place of witness. In verse 9, I read that, meanwhile, a large crowd of Jews found out that Jesus was there and came, not only because of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. Lazarus was telling of Jesus' love and power. He was telling the story of what Jesus had done. His life, again, literally, was witnessing to who Jesus was and what he had done. Granted, it was a bit difficult for Lazarus not to tell that story because such a dramatic transformation had happened in him. But again, as Neil's already said, in Matthew and Mark's account of the story, the meal seemed to be given at Simon the leper's house. And it was likely that Simon had been a leper and that Jesus had healed him. So he had a story of healing as well, which is why he was now in a position to host. And it was an opportunity to thank Jesus, but also to publicly witness and to share his story of what God had done. And what was the result of them sharing their stories? Well, it says that many were going over to Jesus and believing in him. People believed in Jesus when they heard the stories of what Jesus had been doing in their lives. And as with Mary and her worship, there were also negative responses. So the Pharisees were planning to kill Lazarus, which wasn't very positive. But I think that this passage really naturally leads us to ask, what story are we telling others about Jesus? Now, I have to say, this is the one that challenged me the most this week as I've been reflecting on it. But as I've been thinking about it, I've realized that it's easier to tell the story of what Jesus is doing because of two things, and they're the first two words. So the more I make myself available to God, the more I'm open to him and worshipping him, the more I'm in a position to see what he's doing and to be able to share that. And also, the more I'm welcoming others and opening up my life, the more opportunity I've got to share my story with others. And so I just thought I'd just update you on the story of my colleague. I don't know if you were here. I don't know even when it was. November time? Was it not till January? Anyway. I did a little testimony about meeting with a friend at school and praying with her and how things were really changing at work. And the colleague Eloise, who I mentioned, we got to pray with her before she emigrated to Australia, kind of plucked up the courage, because we'd been having lunch together. In the staff room, and we've been chatting and sharing our stories, and the stuff she said, and I was thinking, you're so open for me to pray with you. This is really exciting. So I did ask her, and she said, oh, I was going to ask you if you'd pray. I was like, great, brilliant. So we did. We prayed with her before she left. She joined in praying as well. And then since she's moved, we've got this fantastic banter going on WhatsApp. We're in touch like more than a couple of times a week, probably. She's been asking for prayer for a flat and for a job. She's been just sharing how homesick she's been, and we've just shared about how being thankful can be really helpful for that. She started a prayer journal. And then, just yesterday, she sends me a video of her on the beach. But she pans out around the beach, and there's Jesus written in, like, you know, aeroplane cloud writing, you know, when it comes out the back of a plane. Jesus written in the sky. And so she just said, look what's written in the sky. I was like, that's so amazing. But, it's not really... I don't have a testimony of somebody being raised from the dead. I would love that, Lord. That would be great. And I don't always have testimonies of healing right here and now. But I have testimonies of the peace that he gives and the joy that he brings and how he's moving and doing stuff all the time. And actually, that is what I can share, and that's what you can share too. So yeah, that was just hopefully an encouragement in that. But actually, how are we? What story are we telling others about Jesus? What do our lives tell others about Jesus?
Fantastic. So we're coming into land. And three words from Bethany. Worship, welcome, and witness. But the thing that we want to end it on is that it's not about our effort. There's a challenge in those three words and those three questions that we're giving out to us all as a community. How do we wrestle with these things? But we want to finish on an invitation rather than a challenge. And the invitation is centered on Jesus. You see, in the story of Bethany, worship is about Jesus. It's centered on him and who he is. The welcome for those people come because of what Jesus has done in their lives. He has set them free from the fears that stop us opening ourselves up, physically in terms of our homes, but internally sharing our lives with others. He has set them free from the shame and the fear that means they can enter into welcome and hospitality. And the witness comes because of what Jesus has done. Jesus never asks us to declare anything that we haven't seen, because he says, go and be my witnesses. Go and tell what you see. And so the witness is centered on who Jesus is and what he has done. And so the invitation of today, as we think about these three questions — that's a bit small, next time I'll work better on that to make it bigger, but we'll send this out so you can see them. And hopefully, these are the questions for small groups. So those of you in small groups will be able to look at these and think about these three questions. But the invitation is for Jesus to journey with you in this. Which one particularly strikes you today? Which one particularly has Jesus got his finger on? Is it about worship and the extravagant worship and the giving money, time and effort? Is it about welcome and opening up our lives and our homes to others? They might see who Jesus is in the midst of it. Is it about witness and telling of all that Jesus has done? As we were praying, Natalie just had a sense of that invitation of Jesus, which I'm just going to get you to share about the thirst, and then we're going to spend a little bit of time. We're going to do two responses. We're going to have a time of response individually, and then Paul's going to lead us in a corporate time praying with each other. So but just share that word about.
So I just had a sense of feeling thirsty for more of God, and an invitation to come to the well and to draw from the well, to draw from Jesus today. And really over these next 4 weeks as well, this season of Lent, actually God wants to meet with you. He wants to satisfy your thirst. And this is a great time to focus on him, but to come today, to come and to draw from that well.
And my sense in that is that actually the challenge of the three questions can be kind of like salt, so they can kind of be that taste in your mouth. You kind of go, oh, that's a little bit, oh. But at the same time, it makes us hungry for more of Jesus. It makes us think, actually, if that's the way that God's designed us to live, then let's step into that and ask us to say, Jesus, I need you to meet with me if I'm going to engage with this. So I think it'd be good to just have some time, just individually. And I think we've got time. If we're going to just have a moment just by ourselves, and then I'm going to get the band to come up and just sing a song over us, or we can join in with that song as part of our response. And then Paul is going to lead us in praying with each other as well. So if I get the band up ready, but let's just take a moment. Allow one of those questions to be the invitation of Jesus for more of him. The invitation to talk with him about it. Holy Spirit, come. Come and be at the center of who we are.